Hi there, and welcome to the One Pres Pod, a podcast for First Presbyterian Church in Fort Smith. On this podcast, we talk about all things related to faith and the life of followers of Jesus. Join us.
Well, hello again, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the One Pres Pod with me.
What?
Phil Blackburn.
And Tasha Blackburn.
That's right, we're together again. Good to see you.
It's nice to see you. We are, I like how we act like we have not seen each other all day. But as far as our listeners are concerned, we haven't.
That's right. We have not been together for you people in a week, but we're back.
Exactly. And it's been a beautiful week. As we were getting the sound set up to go today, I actually was looking out the window and, you know, the seasons have turned and it is a, fall is a beautiful season.
There's a gentle breeze outside.
Exactly. Blue skies.
Lovely.
A gentle breeze. It's a beautiful season to live in the River Valley, and we hope you guys are enjoying that, too. We are actually, though, in the third of our six Great Inns.
We sure are, Tasha.
Of the church.
Let's recap.
Yeah, okay. What's the recap?
So week one was the proclamation of the gospel for the salvation of humankind.
Yes.
Week two was the shelter, nurture, and spiritual fellowship of the children of God. And then
yes,
week three
is... Which, by the way, if you listen to this podcast in the next day or two, will be Sunday's sermon topic,
yes.
too. So then, and then now week three...
is the maintenance of divine worship.
Maintenance sounds very exciting.
It does. You know, one of the things I like about the Great Inns is kind of some of the anachronistic language. You know, we wouldn't say that now, the maintenance of divine worship.
I know, like, but they did in 1910.
They did in 1910. Now maintenance is about vehicles, but there were remarkably few vehicles
in 1910. Yes. Well, and remarkably few HVAC units to,
that's correct.
To maintain.
There was
well.
Not as much to maintain.
Yes.
Nobody would go out and be like, well, I'm doing some maintenance on the horse. Right? Like, I don't think they talked like that. But anyway, so maintenance here means maintaining.
Yes, maintaining divine worship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think maybe we should begin by talking about what might be the common understanding of what worship is, but isn't actually what it's supposed to be at its best. And
right.
I think we think worship, of course, we think, oh, it's this 1 hour. Or depending on your background, hour and a half.
Mm-hmm. Or if you come to day one, about 37 minutes.
Or 37 minutes if you come to day one. One time a week in one place. And it has a very set thing. You know, anyway, it's almost can become worship is a duty.
Mm-hmm.
Worship is an obligation. Worship is on my to-do list. And that some weeks we get something out of it and some weeks we don't.
Mm-hmm.
But that's worship. Worship is that service time, and it's something I might or might not feel obligated to do.
Right.
But that's not, that is it some weeks, but that's not it at its best.
No.
And at its truest goal.
Mm-hmm.
Say a little more about what it is at its truest goal and at its best.
Do you not know?
No, I don't know. I need you to share with me.
Well, I mean, I think it's all of these sentences, like we've been saying so far, you're going to get, I mean, tired of us saying it. They're loaded, right?
Yeah.
Every word, there was a great economy of words in these sentences. Everyone matters. And I think here, for what it is at its best, is divine.
Yeah.
A good worship service pulls us away from ourselves and from our petty human baggage that we bring into church on a Sunday. And reorients us to placing God at the center, not of our own lives, but of all existence.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a key piece, right? Like, when we worship God, it pulls us away from us, orients us toward God, and then ideally, that then sets us up to go back out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
It also is a primary function of our existence, which is to praise the Lord. The Psalms are quite clear about that.
Yeah. With every breath, praise the Lord.
Right.
That's worship.
Right. That's
outside of
worship.
That
right.
Hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think you could even maybe make the case that every time you say God is good or anything like that, anything time you think about the greatness, the majesty, the glory that is God, you're worshiping in some way.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I often like to think about this. And it, maybe it'll be a helpful image. You know, our Catholic brothers and sisters, for generations, the priest faced
away
from mm-hmm. the congregation. Had so picture this, if you would the priest, if you don't know about it, the priest would turn their back on the congregation and would face what they call the altar, what we would call the chancel or the front of the church. They turned away from the congregation and they faced the altar. And that was on purpose because the recipient of worship is God, mm-hmm. right?
Right?
So it really gave people this mm-hmm. visual and tangible mm-hmm. reminder that worship isn't even necessarily about me getting my needs met, mm-hmm. right? It's about I have come here to, as you've put it, put the focus on God. I've come to reorient mm-hmm. toward God. And it's interesting, even the Catholics, the priests have turned around.
Yes.
You know, and we never were turned that way. But I almost wish we could use that reminder sometimes.
Yes.
We should turn in our own heads and be reminding ourselves, who is the beneficiary of this? Mm-hmm. Who is the recipient? Who's the subject and who's the object?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The object of worship is God.
Right.
Not whether or not I found the music meaningful.
Correct. So let's debunk just a couple things real fast that I think have become quite popular in our context. And let's start with music, right?
Mm-hmm.
So first things first, God doesn't care about the instrument or the style.
Are you sure? I think God has a preference for the lute.
Right. Maybe the lute or the lyre.
Or the lyre.
But
it's in the Psalms,
right.
I'm just saying.
When we talk about, a lot of times we'll talk about, I think worship music should be like this.
Yeah.
What you're talking about is your own personal preference.
Mm-hmm.
And your own personal preference is legitimate.
Yes.
But
where do you feel drawn
right.
further into the divinity?
Right.
That's important.
Right. But don't confuse
yes.
musical style for proper worship.
And this has been something the church has been dealing with for at least 40, 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it has even unfortunately reached such a level that it's been termed the worship wars.
Right.
You know? And that's a sad...
It's very sad
state of affairs,
right.
because let's remember
right.
the core identity.
Yeah.
The core identity
mm-hmm.
is about God as the mm-hmm. object of our worship.
Right.
Music is a tool.
Right. So when we, this is the second piece of that. When we sing,
mm-hmm.
when we play an instrument in the context of worship, the audience is not the congregation, nor is it the people sitting next to you. The audience is God.
Exactly.
So whether you can sing or can't sing is incidental.
Yeah.
Whether or not you know the song or don't know the song is incidental. When you sing, you are offering worship to God.
Yes.
And that's, I mean, the Psalms were songs, right?
Mm-hmm.
They sang those.
Mm-hmm.
And singing has always been a piece of really every tradition, global world religious traditions.
Absolutely.
Behavior around worship. And certainly for us it is. So when we sing, God's the audience. So those are a couple of quick pieces about music. I think another thing that you and I talk about a lot amongst ourselves, and I don't know that we've ever preached a sermon on this, maybe I will in a week. worship isn't a show, right? It's not
yeah,
a performance.
It's
we don't,
not supposed to be.
It's not supposed to be a show
yeah.
or a performance. I remember I had a youth one time in Illinois say that they found worship boring, and I was like, so? Its purpose is not to entertain you.
Yeah.
Its purpose is to give you a space and opportunity to worship God in a very specific way.
Yeah.
And do it with
Now, if we in worship are setting up barriers to
mm-hmm.
that,
right.
then absolutely, we have got to do our best to be faithful in that moment
yes.
so that worship can have its opportunity to
mm-hmm.
meet divine,
right.
right?
Right.
That divine worship piece. But if it's just because you're
mm-hmm.
15 or 45 or 85 and
mm-hmm.
you find it boring,
right.
that's a separate subject.
That's a you problem.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think, you know, when you and I work on our sermons, and on the rare occasions we do talk about it, I don't think people know that. We don't talk about our sermons
yeah.
much before or after.
Yeah. It's sort of a no-no subject.
It is.
In our
it's kind of taboo.
It's taboo.
but we never talk about, you know, constructing a sermon that we think people will like.
Yeah.
Like, that's not, like, you should know that about us. Like, we don't sit down and think, okay, well, what's a sermon that people would like about this passage? Like, that's just not a category that we were trained in or that we think in. And that's because it's divine worship, right?
What we are thinking instead is, what's a way that can potentially could help to get in to this teaching, or what's a path in, what's a handhold, you know, what's a practical image or story or example or turn of phrase that will give some handholds to, so that we can together sort of deepen into the teaching that's offered today. So we are, it's not like we want it completely inaccessible.
No.
That, those handholds are what's important to us, but whether or not, you know, you're going to...
Whether or not you find that handhold entertaining.
Yeah. And you probably don't.
If you do, that's great. Like, we want to be engaging. But we don't think about it in that category. You know, when somebody makes a movie, they focus test that stuff because they want to know if people are going to like it.
Yes.
This is not a movie. It's not a TV show. It's not a stand-up comedy routine. It's not a concert. It's not audience-oriented.
It is a whole different way of using your ears.
Right.
And it's a whole different way of being a participant slash listening member, even. It, which I think is what can be so hard for folks, as some of that communal understanding fades.
Yep.
We come in, you know, Barbara Ann Taylor, as you know, has a famous tiny little book on this, where she talks about people bring the same ears into church that they brought. They use the same ears all week long. So the same ears were when they listened to the news, and the same were when they went to that concert, and the same were when they talked to that, sorry, used car salesman, but the used car salesman, those are the same ears.
Right.
And if, but it's a different request on the listening. And on the participating.
So, you know, it's just, and the task is becoming, I'm not a big believer of like, we've lost God in this society. Like, I don't really think that, but we are worse at sitting, being still, listening, engaging with our brains and our hearts.
It's hard for us.
Right. We are accustomed at this point to being entertained and engaged. I am too. You are too. It's not like we don't live here.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I've heard some stupefyingly boring sermons that I had a difficult time engaging in my life. And so I get it. I'm not trying to say, you know, we expect perfection out of everybody that comes in. But this is, the purpose here is just to have a reminder of what we're trying to do. And so I think that that's why, getting back to the original question, that divine piece is the one. If you're going to carry anything from this conversation with you, when you come into a time of worship, it's divine. Keep that word.
It is. It is your opportunity. And I would say sort of two things about, for example, if the worship service, for whatever reason that day, whatever worship service you're attending, if for whatever reason it is just not becoming that avenue for you, then don't listen. Use your other senses. Most sacred spaces have a cross in them. Most have, you know, maybe a communion set up front, or a baptismal font visible, or a fish symbol or something. You know, use your other senses. And there is nothing wrong with saying, I'm going to use the next 30 minutes to do those things I don't do all week long. Sit, be still, not be on my phone. Try to quiet my mind and heart, and maybe I'm going to use this as a focused sort of prayer time looking at that cross.
Right.
Don't listen to the sermon.
Yeah, tune out.
if the anthem's not your favorite, don't listen.
Yep.
This is, God is your audience. So that's a good reminder. And the other thing I'd like to give, because I need visual handholds, but we don't have this for our day one service because we're in a basement. But in our sanctuary, I think I've mentioned this to the congregation before, but I don't think there has been a Sunday that has passed when at some point in that worship service, I have not looked up at the ceiling. Because as folks who've been in that room know, it's not just an arched ceiling, it's like a pointed arch ceiling, right? So picture not just a round, but it has a little point, like it's called a Gothic arch. But I looked it up once, and those are supposed to be mini steeples. like that little Gothic mm-hmm. arch that has a tiny point at the top. It's supposed to be a mini steeple, and so it's supposed to point to heaven. And I don't think there has been a worship service in that room that has passed when I have, that has not been my prayer. Mm-hmm. I look up at that ceiling and I think, my prayer is that this is pointing to you.
Right.
My prayer is that you are the audience and, mm-hmm. and you feel that we have worshiped mm-hmm. you. Like, that's worship.
Right.
So if it's not meeting your needs, I would really encourage, think about, well, then what's going to point to heaven?
Right. Yeah. And I think that's a thing. It's like, it's not there to meet your needs.
Yeah. What points to heaven?
We have gotten so accustomed to that, right?
Points to heaven? And maybe you spend the whole hour in sort of a fervent prayer within yourself that says, God, help me better point to heaven.
Right.
God, show me the way to better point to heaven. Mm-hmm. What would that look like mm-hmm. this afternoon?
Right.
What would that look like at work tomorrow morning?
Yeah.
Boy, I can't think of a better maintenance of divine worship, right, mm-hmm. than to do that.
Right. And so then you see in this conversation, I think, how important it is that the church, capital C church, do this well.
Yeah.
Right? If we give into culture in too many ways, then our whole kind of edifice crumbles. Mm-hmm. Like, our worship has to be divine. And if it isn't, then bad things happen, you know. In August, we were studying the Theological Declaration of Barmen, which was written in Nazi Germany in 1933. And a lot of that very short theological document is about worship.
Mm-hmm.
Because the German churches were being given basically talking points to weave into sermons to perpetuate Nazi ideology, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look at the consequences mm-hmm. of that decision by the church.
Mm-hmm.
To make something other than Jesus the source of its proclamation.
Mm-hmm.
Worship has to be divine, and when it isn't, the whole thing. So it didn't matter how good their Sunday school classes were or how many people their soup kitchens fed, the whole thing collapses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I tend to think of worship really as the hub of the wheel of the church's life together.
Absolutely.
If it's not going well, if it's poor, and you and I were very much taught, by the way, that worship should be well done, right? We know who said that to us.
Yeah.
Worship should be well done.
In part, not to be impressive, but to get out of the way.
Right.
If you are fidgeting up there, mm-hmm. if you're dropping your notes, if you're stumbling through your words, then guess who this moment's been about?
Right.
You have to get out of the way.
That's right. And worship leaders and sacred spaces have to really cut down on distractions as much as possible. We know it's hard. We know that coming in and setting your mind on God for an hour and doing something very different than you have throughout your week is difficult. Every way that that's made more difficult, whether it be through stumbling through a sermon, having a cluttered chancel, having mistakes in the bulletin, every single one of those things draws your mind away
mm-hmm.
from its work of trying to focus on God.
Mm-hmm.
So imperfections, mistakes, poor worship leadership, poor reading, poor music, these things all draw you away. So it's not about the show. It's about helping to create a space where you can get into the flow
mm-hmm.
of worship. We want you in the flow of
mm-hmm.
worship.
Mm-hmm.
Can I
take a left turn here for just a minute?
I don't know why you wouldn't.
Well, there's a whole other, literally, realm of worship that I think we should talk about in this setting. And the shorthand for it, I would say, is often when we have communion, in the invitation to come to communion or in some sort of piece of that, we might say something like, this here at this table is the meeting place of heaven and earth,
mm-hmm.
right? That might be a phrase people have heard or now hopefully will become familiar. This table is the meeting place of heaven and earth. Well, what in the world does that mean? Well, where we're getting that is what we find in Scripture that is happening in heaven. What do we think is happening in the next life? Well, what we find in Scripture is it's worship. It's praise and adoration and it's singing
mm-hmm.
and it's kneeling. It's worship. And so we get an even fuller understanding of this from our Greek Orthodox brothers and sisters. But this idea is that divine worship is going on all the time. The heavens are always worshiping, and that when we walk in the room and when we start that first hymn, we actually get to join them for a while.
Yeah.
And I think that, I don't think hardly anybody's thinking that.
Right.
When they race out of the house and their hair's not even quite dry because they're running late and they got to get everybody loaded up and they don't really feel like it, but they just made it in. Well, we believe that in that moment, it's a meeting place of heaven and earth,
mm-hmm.
because we are joining in with them of what they are doing all the time. And they're going to do it when we leave, and they're going to do it when we, you know, all week long when that sanctuary sits empty. I just think that's a really important promise to hold on to and touchstone to hold on to for mm-hmm. what worship is.
Mm-hmm. It is. That's really great. And I know, that image is, I think, very helpful.
You're just joining
right.
in. It may feel like it took all day, that hour of worship, mm-hmm. but really what's happening is for a very brief period of time, you are joining into mm-hmm. something that's happening in heaven all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You get the opportunity to join in for a few minutes.
Yeah.
For what the saints are doing all the time. That's what we read.
Right. I mean, and if you're wondering, like, that's how heaven is depicted in Revelation.
Yeah, I'm pulling this from Revelation.
Right? So this is not something that you're just pulling out of your backside.
No.
This is the depiction of worship, is one of kind of charismatic song, trying to think of the word, homage, mm-hmm. those sorts of things.
And honoring.
Right. And so, mm-hmm. so when you sing, you're joining those choruses, and,
yeah.
and when the word is proclaimed, you're joining that, and you're joining this great flow of time of
yeah.
the saints who have come before, who have sung those exact same words and read those exact same passages,
exactly,
and offered their prayers and were formed and shaped, and the church that each of us sit in on a Sunday morning is one that we inherited from them,
yeah.
and we will leave for other people. So worship is much, much greater. I'm glad you brought that up, because it is much, much greater than that window of time.
It does not feel like it in the moment, but I wish it would, and I hope it will more for folks, maybe upon hearing this or being reminded of it. I mean, we plunge into a really deep and wide river,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we get carried along for our period of time on our given set of dates, right, of our given life span, we get the opportunity to dip into this deep and wide river
mm-hmm.
of, you know, you think about that. I mean, you know, name somebody. Everybody from, you know, Jesus to Paul to, you know, Mother Teresa read, you know, in Isaiah when it says, I have formed you, I call you by name, you are mine. Like, mm-hmm. Jesus knew that passage,
mm-hmm.
had it memorized probably. I get to know that passage, have it memorized. Mm-hmm. You get
yep.
to join this huge thing, and the most tangible experience of it is worship.
And building off this, kind of to wrap us up today, I think changing the subject ever so slightly, one thing that might help, and I think you do a good job explaining this, help people understand about bringing children into worship. You know, we, you and I both really believe that they should come in early. And hopefully this conversation contextualizes some of that, because, like, we're not worried about them. I know you parents may be. We're not worried about them being bored or
mm-hmm.
making noise.
Well, it is interesting stuff. Because I think this is all related. We've talked about how it's even harder for us to still ourselves, to use the same ears we had all
mm-hmm.
week, but develop the muscle in them
mm-hmm.
to use them differently. Well, for goodness sakes, if that's true for us as adults, and if the ground is shifting under us that quickly for
mm-hmm.
adults that we lose that communal understanding, then you cannot wait until a child is 18, 20 to introduce them to worship. Of course that can happen, and people's lives are changed, and,
mm-hmm.
and God will find you, right? But that whole idea, I have a firm belief that you've got to be It's got to get into your bones. Mm-hmm. That sort of movement of it, that the it just has to get in your bones. Mm-hmm. You almost, and you're, to use the ear thing, you're almost training your ear.
Mm-hmm.
And the younger the better, as far as I'm concerned. In our church, just to let people know, we offer nursery care, but only till the age of six. And then after that, we really do strongly recommend your child can go to kindergarten, they can come to worship, you know, because that formation, that Christian mm-hmm. formation that happens, mm-hmm. Even think about a child looking around the room and seeing all these people older than them singing.
Yep.
How often does a child see that in their week? See like somebody who's 50 over there and 85 over there and 30 over there, all those different ages. They might, if their parents are into it, see their parents sing sometimes around the house, you know, turn on the radio. But even just that simple act of, wow, you know, they're being formed. Mm-hmm. They're being formed. And so the earlier that some of that inner mm-hmm. formation can happen, the better.
There's no substitute for getting those, like those songs that we sing every week, the Lord's Prayer, into their mm-hmm. into their minds as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So that they know the doxology, they know the Gloria, mm-hmm. they know the Lord's Prayer, they understand this is the word of the Lord, mm-hmm. thanks be to God.
Mm-hmm. The rhythm of all of that can be such a comfort and a solace that, and an urging on, mm-hmm. a mm-hmm. pushing, you know, mm-hmm. who knows what it becomes in their life.
Right.
But if it's possible, if it is possible, why not?
Mm-hmm.
You want to begin that early so that you mm-hmm. can see what it might become.
Mm-hmm. And it's important, I think, to tell them this is not for your entertainment.
Yeah.
This is not a movie. This is a time for you to come before God. Little kids can understand that concept,
mm-hmm.
that they're coming before God, and when they sing, they're singing to God just like their parents are. When they pray, they're praying to God just like their parents are. God listens to them and loves them and cares about them mm-hmm. just as much as God does their parents. So anyway, I thought that was a good way to kind of wrap us up today with that reminder. Take your kids to worship, and it'll take about a month, maybe 6 weeks, for them to get used to it, but they'll get used to it.
They will.
And you're not going to bother us.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And am I opposed to any form of bribery? No, I am not. Nope. I am not above that. If it means you say, hey, and then you get to pick where we eat lunch.
Right.
Or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or you get a donut. I mean, come on now.
Right. Whatever it takes.
I'm pretty cheap.
Yeah.
But it's important. And to get that rhythm mm-hmm. and practice set.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, gang. Well, this will wrap up the One Pres Pod for this week. We'll be back with you, obviously, next Thursday. So worship on Sunday. We'll be looking at the shelter, nurture, and spiritual fellowship of the children of God from Philippians chapter 2. I'll see you there.
Thank you for listening to the One Pres Pod. Be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast wherever you found it, and go to onepres.org for more information about First Presbyterian Church. Until next time, peace.